I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio. And you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. See, I tripped you out there, John.
I know. Don't mess up the rhythm, man. We're like many shows in. You can't change your rhythm. You got to do it the same way every time. That's what people expect, man. You got to give them what they want. Anyway, that's Patrick. He's got a book out.
I do.
It's called Into the Fire.
Yep.
Sam Cain.
Book one. That Josh is trying to sell it at a couple conventions here for me.
Yeah. So if you haven't bought it yet, go buy it. I read it. I liked it. I put a review on Amazon, as you should do if you liked it as well. If they didn't like it, should they review it on Amazon too?
Sure,
that still helps. So even if you hated it, say that you hated it, you know.
and then John and I are going to do the cross country Jay and Silent Bob thing where we go and we knock on everybody's door and like, are you user Urban Fantasy Sucks 357? And then kick their butt.
Yeah, I think that's let's do it. I say this summer.
Road trip.
Yeah, I'm John Anelio, and today we're joined by Josh Vogt. Josh is an author. He's got lots of books out, including Enter the Janitor, and he's got a Pathfinder's Tales book out and lots of other cool stuff. And if you go to his website, which is jrvogt.com, like right on the first page, it says janitors, dwarves. So, you know, if you read genre fiction, you know, how can you not want to read about janitors and dwarves? So, Josh, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Good to be back.
Yeah.
You know, John, I don't know if you noticed, like Josh is an honest to goodness working writer.
I mean, that's
like his entire income.
Good. Yes. Yeah. That's really cool. I'm sorry I cut you off there, Josh. What were you going to add to that?
That's fine. Yeah. A lot of people like to think that you can't make a living as just a writer, but I mean, I do editing as well, but I'm lucky to get to do what I love for a living.
If you follow him on Facebook, John, you get to see all the weird ads that he finds that people, it's like, we're looking for a writer who really loves writing and doesn't want to get paid.
Yeah. Yeah,
if you write for the low, I'm sorry, I keep cutting you off, Josh. Go for it.
Yeah, if you write for the love of it, that's essentially it, John.
The love and exposure.
Yeah,
love
and exposure. What I'm wondering, Josh, is if you actually responded to those, would they all be the Huffington Post?
Probably. Many of them are content mills or they're agencies that just want free work. Unfortunately, part of the problem with freelancing is that somebody trying to break into freelance writing, someone's always going to be willing to take low or non-paying jobs to get the credit for it. So,
yeah, and when you talk about those content mills, I think about it from a consumer side or from a, you know, yeah, I guess a consumer side where I use Feedly, which I think I think using an RSS reader, I don't think many people actually do that. I think most people just get their stories from Facebook. I think we're outliers in that way. Not to sound special. I just mean like we used RSS feeders for a long time and we still feel like that's a good way to go about getting your stories. And many people, I should say, just use Facebook or what have you for it. And what I notice is sometimes I'll find some good articles from a certain website and I'll be like, oh, you know what? I'll subscribe to this website and feed it. Cause I use the Apple News too, but the Apple News, you can't subscribe to certain websites. It's more, you can, but it's like, it's really vetted. You can't just find Joe Blow's blog and subscribe to it. At least not at the time of this recording, or at least the last time I checked, it's gotta be one of their approved big sites. And the problem, if you subscribe to something, one of these bigger sites with Feedly, you realize just how much some of these like things put out in a day, and it's, you're just flooded and you realize like, you know, 75% of this I'm not interested in.
And John, as a content marketer, I will tell you that there are some tricks that people do, where they essentially, they post the same thing 3 or 4 times a day on the site with different dates and different times. Mm-hmm. And then it shows up more. So there are things that they do to make it look. But I will tell you that for years, at the end of like the last 5 or 6 years at SF Signal, both John and I at different times we tried to get SF Signal listed as a news source for like Google News and Apple and all those kind of, Never replied. Yeah. And I think, like, didn't Blaster or something only recently get listed now, and they're an approved. I mean, they've been around forever and ever. They've gone through like a couple different rebrands. They were Blaster and Sci-Fi Wire, and then Syfy Wire, and then Blaster again. Now they're back to Syfy Wire, and they're finally being listed by Google News.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Josh, go for it.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, I use Feedly as well. I've got probably about 100 different sites that feed into my mm-hmm. categories. And like you said, the content that they put out is like, if I don't check it every day, every other day, I have like 2,000 unread mm-hmm. things.
Yeah. And I get weird and sort of obsessive about it, where I like to sort of get to like the end of it. Mm-hmm. And I've just noticed I've unsubscribed from certain things, 'cause it's just like, that's just too much. I can't take in that much. And I have a variety of different sources. Like anybody who uses these, like, you know, I have my music sites that I like, and I have my genre stuff and some productivity and, you know, and it's, if something doesn't hold up their end of it, I just unsubscribe. I'm just like, I'm not, because I just noticed myself, like, I'm very good in terms of not checking Facebook and Twitter on my phone anymore, because that was a time suck, but I will still look at Feedly and Apple News. And so I really curate that quite carefully, because that can be a time suck too, is just because you do get like, well, let's get to the end of this. And it's like 30 more stories, 40 more stories. And it's like, I don't, and then you don't read any of them anyway.
That's so why I just use Paul Weimer for all my news. I mean, just follow his Twitter feed and you'll get it all.
Mm-hmm. I'm just hanging at his house. well, I want to talk to Josh about a lot of things, and especially about being a full-time writer. I think a lot of our listeners would get a lot out of that. But before we do that, I do want to tell our listeners, especially those of you who back us on Patreon, thank you for backing us on Patreon. We really do appreciate it. It means quite a bit to us, and we're very appreciative of it. If you don't back us, consider becoming one of our backers. Go to patreon.com/functionalnerds, and you could back us for $1 a month or a couple bucks a month. Anything you do helps. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, see, now I do want to break the rhythm on this. So you thank our Patreon backers every week, and I also think that I appreciate what they're doing. But for all the other, I mean, we have a lot of listeners, John. For all the other people who aren't backing us, if you guys backed us, we could do so many cool things, even if like $1 a month. We could do so many cool things. We could come to your town, to your convention. John and I have been talking about it, because I have a book out now, and, you know, we've got the podcast. We've talked about going, and, you know, like Josh does. Josh goes to, how many conventions have you gone to like last year, Josh?
Last year, I actually went to fewer than normal. I only went to, like, I think 4 or 5. The year before that, I went to like 15 to 20, somewhere
15 to 20. That was like your normal for many years in a row.
Yeah. And this year, I'll be probably going to about 8. And so I've actually got one next weekend.
Which one?
Indiana Comic Con in Indianapolis.
Nice. And see, John and I would do that if we could afford it. We would go. We would totally go. And all it would take is like a few more of our listeners backing us. And then we could go, and we could hang out, and we could record live with Josh in Indianapolis. It would be awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Patrick and I do have, we have spoken more about doing that. And, I'm having some things going on in life where I'm going to be a little more freed up to do things like that as well. A lot of it has been me not being able or willing to travel so much, but yes, it would help. I don't like guilting people, but yes.
No, I love guilting people. It's my entire social media profile. That's what I do.
Is to guilt people.
I guilt people.
Okay, well,
I guilt
them into reading my first posts.
I guilt them into buying my books and stories. Yes, I guilt them into listening to the show. That's the whole process. I mean, come on. I grew up Catholic. We use guilt.
Me too. I'm trying to shy away from it. But no, that's right.
Southern Baptist here, so I totally get that. Yes. Yeah.
No, it's look, if you get value out of the show, it would help us out even more. Because look, since we've been doing it, it's made a big difference, I think, in both the way Patrick and I view the show and our work. I think we always work pretty hard at the show and make sure that we always do a good job and put it out there. But I know once Patreon started happening, I felt a responsibility to the people that listen to the show to, you know, make sure I put my all into it every week, make sure I do some good research on the guests, make sure we have good guests every week, make sure we put out a show every week. We're always pretty good about that. And barring a few exceptions, but we are, you know, we don't ever want to miss a week unless there's an emergency.
We've gotten a broader guest pool as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Josh has been on SF Signal with me several times. I don't remember, Josh, if you've ever been on Functional Nerds before.
I think I was once, yes.
A long time ago, it must have been.
But it might have been a long time ago, yeah, because I don't even.
But, you know, Josh, Josh is a long-time friend of the show. And we love having people like Josh on. And we can do that because we are doing more regular shows. So, yeah, so just go out and back us.
Yeah, it helps. Even if you won't miss a dollar a month, because we back a bunch of people at a dollar or a couple dollars a month, and you don't miss it at all. It's just you'll feel good. You'll feel good. If you listen every week, you'll feel good. All right. But let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Josh, do you have a pick of the week?
I do, actually. So I mentioned before, I'm actually at a friend's house watching her four cats. Her name is Jennifer Brozek, which I don't know if you know her or not.
You're actually watching her cats? Really?
Yes.
Her cats? Oh, my God.
Her cats. They are awesome.
They're just trying to get free editing. I know how you are.
Anyways, you guys... So she just got nominated for the Bram Stoker Award again. I think it's her second official nomination for The Last Days of Salton Academy, which is her first zombie novel. It's a very fast, good read. And I'm not a huge like zombie person. I don't watch zombie movies or read zombie books, but I read this one and it's intense. It's really good. So it definitely deserves a nomination.
And what's it called
Hopefully
again?
She'll win. The Last Days of Salton Academy. Salton is spelled S-A-L-T-O-N.
Mm. Very good. You know, it's funny that you mentioned the zombie stuff. As longtime listeners of the show will know, just from listening every week, you'll get a waft of Plants versus Zombies music coming in because my son, my 10-year-old son, is in the other room, usually playing that while we're recording. And he is someone that I know as he gets older, obviously I think he's going to get into the zombie. He just likes playing that game, but he has never been afraid of sort of scary things that kids would be afraid of. And I keep trying to prepare my wife. I'm like, get ready. Cause when he's like 14, 15, 16, like he's going to be all in on the horror. Like I just cause nothing ever scares him. He loves the zombie games. Like it's like, he's going to be all into the zombie movies and the horror movies. I'm like, cause my wife or I are not into any of that stuff really, but it's like, get ready. Like he's going to be one of those dudes that's got his room with like all the dark and all the gory posters. Like that's going to happen. Like get ready.
Yeah. Honestly, I am not a huge horror person in general. I don't watch horror films. I don't play zombie games and that sort of thing. Although I like horror books like Stephen King. If you count Dean Koontz as horror, and Jennifer does a lot of horror as well. So Shauna McGuire is another favorite. So yeah, for some reason I like horror novels or stories, just not the visual.
Yeah. Cool. Patrick, what's your pick this week?
Well, I thought about going with the game, what was it called? Sherwood Forest, Sheriff of Nottingham. I forget what the name of the game was. It was fun, Josh. I just don't remember what it was called. The game we played at Superstars. What was that called? Sherwood Forest?
Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good game. If you want a quick kind of fun game, that's a good one. But actually, I think I'm going to go with Wynonna Earp.
Oh, okay. Now, I know you did a review of was it a graphic novel? Okay, and isn't there a show, too?
And I'm picking both, and they are different.
Okay.
They are different.
Okay.
So if you want to, you can totally read the book, the graphic novel. It's from IDW. And I do have a piece up on Kirkus on it. And it's a fun read. It's different. It's a different take, and I like it. She is the great 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 granddaughter of Wyatt Earp, and the Earp clan has been cursed. And there is the heir is like a demon hunter, and she's hunting down. Apparently, everybody that Wyatt Earp killed became a demon, and came back. For some reason, there was like a curse, and they don't quite go into it in the first book, all of it. There's a lot of stuff going on in the book, and she's basically working with the Black Badges, which are, it's a secret division of the U.S. Marshals, hunting down demons and kind of, you know, trying to rein them in. And the TV show is different. They, instead of like a Monster of the Week kind of travel show, which is what the comics are, everything is set in one town, in a town called Purgatory. and all the elements are still there. The demons, you know, the people that Wyatt had killed are demons, but they're trapped in this, in the triangle, and in the center of the triangle is the town of Purgatory. And they want out, and she is the heir. It's her responsibility to send them back to hell. And I think the way it works is if she can, if she can send them all back to hell, then it breaks the curse. But apparently what every heir has tried to do is they've tried to do that, and they've all failed. Like, the, eventually the demons get them. There's, I want to say there's like 100 of them, and the most anyone has ever gotten was like 76. And at one time, you know, in one lifetime. And so there's this battle going on between them, and it's kind of cool. They give her she has a little sister in the show, and she's still working with the Black Badges, but they're kind of working out of the local sheriff's office. And I think they did what they had to do on the show to make it work as a TV show. You know, it's like sometimes the comics, they just wouldn't work as a TV show. I think the comic is more like Supernatural. And if they tried to do that, people would just go, oh, it's a Supernatural ripoff as a TV show. So I think what they did with the show works. And it's now on Netflix. And so I'm 11 episodes in, and I'm really enjoying it. Really good show.
Nice. Cool. That sounds great. Yeah, I thought I saw that pop up on Netflix or something. That's why I was like, Patrick just wrote about the graphic novel, I think. There you go. My pick, well, if you listened to our Just the Two of Us last time, my pick is not Iron Fist. I finished it.
Told you.
And it went just as I thought it would. And I pretty much feel the way I felt about it as of that episode. And it, you know, there was a couple things towards the end that were okay, a little better. But yeah, overall, not good. Mm-hmm. Not good. But kind of have to watch it if you want to watch The Defenders, I think. So, you know, that's how it goes. But my pick this week is this, which I'm holding up. This is not dental floss, although I feel like this is a design flaw in this product, because this is a case that looks like dental floss. What these are, Patrick, you're going to be kind of surprised. I hope these don't connect. These are the Apple AirPods. Wow. So I just got them because they were a birthday present. My birthday was in February. And if you've tried to order these or get them in the store, they are really not in the stores. And if you order them, they take about 6 weeks to come. So mine came at the beginning of this week. I should mention, for people who don't know, the AirPods are wireless Bluetooth earbuds from Apple. And I had a pair of Bluetooth earbuds, and I liked them fine, but as any non-Apple earbuds or headphones that I've ever purchased, they crapped out after a couple of months, you know, and if you pay $20-$30 for a set of earbuds, they're probably going to crap out on you like pretty quickly. And my old ones did. So I was really excited to get these, and I've only been using them for a few days. They're awesome. They're great. They're everything I want out of something like this. Now, they are hellaciously expensive. These are $160.
Seen online is that most people are now also buying an accessory for them, which is a cord. They lose one, and they can't find one. And so they're actually getting, there's an attachment, there's a cord that you can buy that attaches to them so that you have them in your ear, and the cord goes over your head and like sits on your neck so you don't lose one, because people are losing just one. And you can't buy just one. So when you lose one, you got to spend another $160.
Yeah. That literally defeats the purpose of having them, though, in my mind. So, because to me, it's like, what I will say about, now the sound quality is good. They're not noise canceling. So if that's a thing for you, then that's might not be what you want. They are as sound quality. They're as good as the regular Apple earbuds, maybe a little bit better. What I have loved about them so far, the two big things that I love is, first of all, they're extremely comfortable in the ear. So if you're comfortable with the normal Apple earbuds, which I know not everybody is, you know, if your ear canal is you know, set up in such a way where the normal ones fit in your ears, these are even better because they don't have the wire hanging down. So they're really light in your ear. So you kind of barely notice them, and because they don't have the weight pulling down, it feels great. And if you shake your head with them in, they don't fall out. Like, they're really secure and snug, but I don't know. So they're very comfortable. So you can have them in for a long time. They auto connect to your iPhone. So basically you just open up the case and pull it up to your iPhone, and then it just recognizes them right away. And then from that point on, anytime you put them in your ears, they just automatically turn on. You don't have to go futzing with the stuff. They'll hook up to your MacBook. They'll hook up to your iPad. Really good. The battery life is phenomenal, because what you do is the case is a charger. So you put a lightning cable into the case, and when the case is fully charged, anytime you put the earbuds back in, it charges them back up again. So you just have to keep making sure the case is, but I haven't come anywhere near using up the charge on these. Like, they're at 100% now, and the case is probably at about 85%. So the battery life is amazing. They're really comfortable. They sound good. They hook up flawlessly with their things. Now, they may break down in a week, and I'll be bitching about them on our next episode. But so far, again, really expensive, but you know, that's kind of Apple's MO with their hardware, is they charge a premium. But I've always been very happy with any piece of hardware I've ever had from Apple. So that is my pick, the AirPods. There you go. Okay. So, Josh, earlier you were talking, or Patrick was mentioning, your full-time writing status and your freelancing. So tell us a little something about how you... I'm going to put it this way. This sounds almost dismissive, and I don't mean it dismissively, but how you cobble together a living and writing.
It is actually very much cobbled.
And on top of that, yes. How many books do you have out?
Technically, well, with the new cleaners, I will have five out.
Okay.
I have the Pathfinder Tales, Forge of Ashes. I have the first two cleaners, Enter the Janitor and Maids of Wrath. The third one is The Dustpan Cometh. And then there's another game tie-in that I wrote that not many people actually know about, called Fate's Fangs, set in, the Latin is Hinc Sunt Dracones, which is Here Be Dragons, which is a really interesting game setting. Basically, the human species elevated all the animal kingdom to be, you know, human level intelligence, and then humanity nuked itself out of existence. So just the animals are left populating the solar system. So I had fun writing it. People seem to like it.
Is the Pathfinder book, is that now distributed by Tor like all the other ones?
I don't think it is. It was actually the last one that Paizo put out themselves before they
go
to Tor. Yeah.
So I was just curious. And then, okay. So now John's question about how do you do this?
Like I said, it is very much, like you said, cobbling. You have to have a lot of different income streams. You have to have multiple clients, because sometimes you have a client who's just a one-off gig. Other times you have a client who you will work with for months. I've had one client that I've worked with for, I think, at least 6 years now, managing their blog and their social media content. But ever since college, every job that I had to do with writing to some degree. I worked as an editor on an online journalism site. I worked as a website writer for a homeschooling company. I worked as a copywriter and a copyright manager for Simon Schuster way back when, and things like that. And over time, I would also get these side gigs and slowly built up this portfolio of work, and then eventually just broke off and started working for myself, basically. And I did that for about 5 years, and I have different sites and different resources that I use to find new work when I need it. And that's often where I get the things that I tweet or put on Facebook about the ridiculous, you know, we need a writer who will write us 10,000 words for $5 kind of thing, which, you know, you see that. And it's ridiculous what people expect, you know, but there are also people who work in foreign countries who that is a living wage. So anyways, I then kind of out of the blue got invited to apply as a full-time editor for Paizo after I did the Pathfinder book for them, which is why I moved from Denver to Seattle, which is where I live now. And I worked there for about a year and a half and realized that one of the reasons I've actually shifted back to full-time freelancing is I realized it was pulling away from some of my ability to invest authoring career.
There is this wonderful idea among writers where we want the stable gig. You had the stable gig, and you found that it was actually killing your creativity.
Not killing my creativity, but killing my – not killing, but I could write – but I couldn't do things like go to the conventions as much as I want to, or do some of the promotion and other elements that you have to do as an author if you want to continue to build that career. I still do editing and freelance editing. I just finished a contract project for Paizo for one of their upcoming projects, and will still do freelance for them as I go on. But having the flexibility and the time to be more of an author, I think I realized was my priority in the long run. So it was Paizo is an awesome company. They're some of I think they're the best people that I've worked with, to be honest, in that regard. And I still see many of them from time to time. They'll be at Gen Con and I'll see them there. It was just realizing, the authoring is what got me in. Being an author and being a writer is what got me into it. And if I had stuck out that job for, even 3 to 5 years, I probably would have had to kind of start all over at some point in that regard. So, that's kind of where it brought me to now. So I'm back. I'm doing the freelance hustle, as I like to call it.
That it reminds me of... I may have mentioned this on the show before. There's a guy named Derek Sivers who he does a lot of different things. Most well known for owning CD Baby, which was a company, which was the first and really for a long time only company where independent artists and bands and things could release their albums independently. He was really a pioneer in that. Anyway, he eventually sort of sold the company, and he made a lot of money and did a lot of different things. But he wrote a blog post recently about if it's not hell yes, it's no. And I've really taken that to heart, especially as you get a little bit older. When you're young, when you're just starting out in whatever career, whatever artistic pursuit you may have, you should kind of say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. Learn what, get all that experience. But as you get a little bit older, a little more experienced, don't say yes to everything. And really, if your first feeling upon something isn't hell yes, then it should be no, because it's going to take time away from the things that you really want to work on, even if you don't know what that is. Right. But if you're, so you're talking, I don't know if this is a similar thing, but while you're working on this thing, which you kind of like, and obviously there's other things, like sometimes we have to make decisions based on making a living, and that's kind of not quite the same thing. But let's say someone offered you to write a book, like a novel, but it was not really what you were interested in, and whatever the case may be. Now you're working on this, and as anybody knows, writing a novel is a gargantuan task. So you may now get another idea for one of your own original novels, and now you don't have the time to work on that because you're working on this. Yeah. So I think, again, as you get older, I think that's, I know for me, that's kind of a motto that I've been, because some things come along and I'm like, that's kind of interesting. Like, that's kind of cool, but I don't think it's hell yes though. I don't think it's that. So what do you think about that?
For me, the dream is to, I don't make enough just off my novels and short stories to make a living on just those alone. That would be the dream, is that mm-hmm. I can work on my own fiction or whatever projects that I say hell yes to that come along my way. Right now, the freelance copywriting and editing pays much better and pays the bills for the most part. I still, I do well with the royalties and all that kind of stuff. But and hopefully that will shift over the years, so I won't need to do as much of the copywriting and what I call the corporate copywriting, and I can focus more on the fiction side of things. One technique that I have used, and I know many other freelancers have used, is if a project comes along that is interesting, or at least could pay really well, but you also aren't necessarily hell yes about it, you quote a 2 to 3 times your normal rate on it. And that way, if they go, oh, no, we can't do that, you're like, all right, no worries. And then if they do say, oh, yeah, we'll pay that, then you're like, all right, but it won't be the most fun thing, but it will be very worth the effort. Let's put
that. I have a question, John, and I apologize. This has been bugging me for a while now. I know James. I know the folks at Paizo. I also think that they're awesome. I'm wondering, though, at the weekly staff meetings at Paizo, in order, like when you start the meeting, do you have to roll for initiative?
No, fortunately
not. See, now that I'm disappointed now.
I know. They will just go around. We just all stand in a big circle in one of our, or we did. They still do. And you just go, you start one end, you just go around. You all tell a little bit about what you're working on. So everyone kind of is up to date on where different projects are. So yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah. I had an experience that Josh had with in terms of the asking for more money. I had a lot of, so as people know, I'm an elementary school music teacher. But for a while, when my wife was staying home with our son when he was very young, I taught a lot of private students too. And at one point I had, so after school, I would just drive around to people's houses and teach guitar lessons. And I had like three or four students every day after school, which would actually take a long time when you're going from house to house around a couple of towns. And at one point after I did that for a couple of years, I was like, I can't do this much anymore. I had like 12 or 13 students, which is a lot for a week when you're already working a full-time job. And I was already like doing the, I think we were even starting the podcast at this point already. Anyway, so when I wanted to really, you know, lessen my load, I was like, you know what? I'm going to charge $5 more per lesson. And I bet a bunch of people will quit and it'll be fine. Now, these are weekly lessons. At the time I was charging 25, I think. So I went up to $30 for a half hour lesson. I'm like, this will drop a bunch. Yeah. Well, I was going to their house too. So, I mean, and that was sort of the going rate anyway, but, so I'm like, oh, you know, at this point I'm going to have to start charging more. And I just sent an email to everybody, like all the parents that I taught. And I'm like, you know, so I'm gonna be charging $30 per lesson now. Not one of them quit. Every single one was like, oh yeah, that's fine. So man, I was undercharging for a long time, but as much as I didn't like it, I was like, so that's a weekly lesson. So I increased my monthly income by like $500 by doing that without doing any more work.
At the same time, John, Swallow Hill was charging like $65 to $70 a lesson for guitar lessons here in Denver. At that same time.
Is that like a music
store? Yeah, at that same time period.
Yeah.
No, no, it's not a music store. The Swallow Hill is the, do you even know what I'm talking about, Josh? It's the music collective. So it's this old church in Denver that they converted into a place where kids can go and learn about music and instruments, and they put on concerts and all kinds of stuff. They have a recording studio, and you can.
Oh, it's more like you can school buy a rock kind of a thing. Almost,
and then you're a member of Swallow Hill, and then you get everything a little bit cheaper and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that stuff is actually kind of, I have to say, as much as I always, you know, sort of scoffed at that School of Rock stuff, I've seen those like groups of kids performing at, you know, little things in the summer, like whatever kind of things in the park or what have you.
Well, yeah,
they're always really good. And so I can't say they will
take anybody of any age who wants to learn an instrument and teach you. If you're and if you're a singer, they have singing instructors. And then they also do like acoustic concerts. Mm-hmm. So they'll bring in bluegrass bands and people who don't need, like, you know, it's not like you're going to see G3 there, but you're going to see other folks. And it's basically the main church section of it is where they do all their concerts now, because it's got great acoustics in there.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Josh, one of the, and you know, to kind of bring it back to what you were talking about with the writing, I feel like this is a conversation that comes up sometimes on social media, probably a lot, or I witness it every once in a while. And it was someone that I'm friendly with, an author type, independent author type. And, you know, they were sort of reaching out to other authors who are making some kind of a living writing, and you know, they were thinking of quitting their day job, and I feel like I've seen this a lot, and I always feel like probably shouldn't quit your day job. And I know that's dismissive to say that, I think it kind of comes back to what you were saying about the multiple income streams. Like, I think sometimes now we use Patreon. Mm-hmm. Again, as our listeners know, this is not Patrick and I's full-time job. Like, the Patreon thing is great, and we'd love more people to back it. And it'd be amazing if we were able to make a full-time living through the podcast, but that is nowhere near what we do with it. I think some people see some folks and they're like, well, I'll just throw a Patreon up there and I'll just write my short stories and stuff and I'll be able to make a living. And clearly that's not the way it works. But what are your feelings about all that in terms of how one can possibly work towards transitioning towards something like making a living writing?
Yeah, you don't quit your day job right away. I mean, you don't sell a book and then that you
Although
expect
I know
to
someone who
live
did
off that.
That.
Most
And they're now back at
yes,
the day job.
There are people who exactly. Yeah, most authors that I know either have been writing for a very long time and have built up the long tail of revenue. But most authors that I know, unless they do the whole, they get the black swan of a six-figure deal and movie and what have you, they still have a day job. Or they do some other thing, like an indie author that I know, she flips houses and that's her main source of income. But it gives her the ability to, you know, to do writing most of the time. But yeah, it's not a rock star industry for most of the time. You have the 0.00001% who can do it full time. And for me, like I said, the fiction, that's what I love and that's my passion, but that would not sustain me. If I gave up the freelance copywriting, I'd have to go work at a restaurant again or something like that, or find a part-time job. And that's just the reality of the industry.
I forget who it is. Yeah, there's someone on Facebook who has 20 books out, 20 science fiction novels, and it has done really well on that. And talked about how after like book 17 came out or something, they finally quit their day job. And then said that book 23 or something was coming out next month. And they just went back to their day job because they still could not make a living at it.
Well, it's not even just a living. I mean, sometimes you just need the benefits. You know, the healthcare and that kind of stuff too, that a job would provide. Hopefully the Affordable Care Act will remain in place long enough. I went on that right as they were trying to repeal it and that sort of thing. So that's always sort of fun. And you see people out there who that is something that would save their life. And all the every freelancer, somebody who is self-employed knows how important that kind of thing is, because what other option is there except for paying $10,000 for a dental procedure or something like that? That's another issue that you have to consider as well.
Yeah. Cameron Hurley wrote a good piece about that in her Geek Feminist Revolution. There's a big story about her healthcare things, and, you know, she had some significant health issues and how, you know, she would work these full-time jobs to get, you know, to then pay a lot for insurance, you know, to cover this stuff, because it's like pre-existing condition and all, you know. So that's, if you're interested in reading about that, I mean, I think that's a great collection of essays no matter what, but there's definitely some good stuff there. All right, well, we are just about out of time. Josh, thanks for joining us again today. Once again, jrvotevogt.com for his website, and on Twitter at jrvote. Tell us a little something about maybe some cons that you're going to be going to or other kinds of things coming up.
So the next weekend is Indiana Comic Con. So I'll be there with the group called Bard's Tower, which is kind of the reworking of what used to be the Wordfire team that would do the big booths and all the posters and that kind of stuff. Patrick knows how that works. The following month, I will be at Phoenix Comic Con. In June, I will be at Origins. And then in August, I will be at Gen Con. I might pick up something else in between there. And then in November is OriCon, which is down in Portland, which is a really fun one that I did last year. So that's what I have so far. Like I said, I'll probably pop up in another couple places.
In a Twitter profile kind of way, tell us about the Cleaners.
The Cleaners, supernatural sanitation company, where janitors and maids and plumbers and other sanitation workers fight the forces of corruption and magical muck, the occasional sewer monster and garbage golem. The third one will be out April 26th, officially. We had a pre-release at Emerald City Comic Con a month ago, and that one is called The Dustpan Cometh. I'm currently working on the fourth one called Fellowship of the Squeegee, and then I'm planning on, at the moment, I'm planning on trying to wrap it up by book number six.
Awesome. Very good. Very good. Awesome. Cool. Once again, Patrick's got a book out, so go and pick that up. That is Into the Fire, the Sam Kane book one. Go and get that on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. And it's available as an ebook and a trade paperback. Patrick, anything else you want to let our listeners know about this week?
Conference at the end of the month of April. I'm teaching Scrivener and I'm going to be on a panel or two, and I'll be around hanging out and singing Angry Robot with Mike Underwood at the bar and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe I might actually walk up to Kevin Hearn and give his beard a little bit of a tug. See if it sticks. That kind of stuff. Yeah. Might walk up to Kristen Nelson and say, you know, what can you tell me about Gail Carriger that nobody else knows? You know, stuff like that. Yeah. I'll tell Gail I was talking to Josh. Gail get this dreamy look in her eyes and say, "Oh, one of the pretty boys."
The funny thing with Gail is the first time that I saw her outside of her, you know, usual con outfit, I didn't recognize her at all. Like she.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's a good strategy. For us, once again, if you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers. Go over to patreon.com/functionalnerds. All right, everybody, have a great week. We will see you next time.
Thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.